Welcome to Storytelling with Lindsay Bednar.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
All right.
Good. I am beyond excited to have you on today. I know so little about the financial world. It's embarrassing. And actually, I was thinking about what women do I know other than yourself that really have like the finances cornered, and they seem to be have their head wrapped around any type of investing. I have a friend who is a financial planner, and that is the one person that came to mind where I was like, oh, she knows this industry a little bit more. But you have such a knack for just trading and money management, and such a fantastic like industry for a female that I don't think we see hardly at all, and definitely not often.
Yeah, thanks. It's sort of wild to hear you say that because, you know, I was an English major and I was a writer. Like, I used to win all these writing awards, and then I was a lawyer, which was like all writing and research. And my husband was in finance, and, you know, we were together for 20 years and he would just talk about financy things, and it would just be like, whoosh. Like, I just was like, this is so boring. I am, you know, blacking out right now until you're done talking about this.
Right. And can I just stop you right there?
Did yes.
You say husband?
Yes.
Yeah. I've never yes. heard that before.
Yeah. So it feels sort of wild to me because I just follow these, whatever, I call them follow the flicker, but I'm like, why am I interested in trading in the stock market? This is the weirdest thing I've ever heard of. And yet it was like so much a pull and a call. And so I followed it and it just sort of kept unfolding and like layer by layer. And then I was like, whoa, this is so not just about money. Like, this is, there's so much depth here. There's so many teachings. And so now I'm like, what weird turn of events is this that like, this is my thing. Like, this is my life's work. It's just bizarre for me because that was not at all my path for 40 years.
Yeah. So take us on that path, because one of the things that is a common theme in the guests that I bring forward is kind of like finding your thing throughout a myriad of circumstances, but really, as you said, following the flicker, the nudge, whatever it is, and how people's lives transform in such a beautiful way once you just start to follow that. So if you could kind of walk us through that journey.
I just got chills, and it's so funny. I was having this exact conversation this morning with a client, you know, and she was like, who am I even? Like, I thought I knew who I was. And now when I actually start listening to the flicker or, you know, whatever the sensations in our bodies, we're like, you know, like, behold, who is this person? So to answer your question, I feel like, I don't know, in my late 30s, I just started getting like more of these calls that felt illogical, and yet they were persistent. So like one, I ended up taking a graduate course in traditional Mexican medicine in the mountains of southern Mexico, which just for the path that I had been on was really a big turn in an opposite direction. And yeah, I felt the call and I went. And that particular trip, people I met there and the places that I was exposed to, like, really felt like it activated something in me. And so that was sort of slower at first. You know, it'd be a lot of it. It did involve being in different places where I think they were so starkly different than, you know, I grew up in the Northwest of the United States. And so it's a particular feel, and that sort of activated something different in me. And then I, you know, I'd been practicing law for a long time, and there's this sort of moment where I was like, you know, we realized that my husband and I wanted really different things, right? We had met early in college and really had a very, very deep love. And yet there was a moment of realizing like, oh, love is not enough. Like, love alone is not enough for a life if people want really decidedly different things. And so that was kind of wild because I made a decision that like we were going to shift our relationship from being married to being co-parents, and sort of blew the doors open in many ways. So,
yeah, and such a scary decision that I don't think people give enough credit to the bravery that comes with it. Because when you know that you can continue on one path and there's a type of safety and comfort and familiarity with that, and this other path is wildly unknown and very scary.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm sure a lot of
Yeah. Fun. I mean, the unknown, it's an obvious thing to say, but it is really scary. And the ways that we as humans can sort of toggle between like safety, the known, and like the what if. And so that I made that decision, and right away my husband told me he was moving across the country. So right away I had envisioned that I would be in this co-parenting relationship, you know, 1 week, 1 week, switching off. And no, that wasn't what happened. And so I essentially had this period where I had a blank slate, and I really dared to ask myself, like, what would I want my life to feel like? Like, I had lived a life before then based on what it looked like, right? And it looked very perfect. You know, I had the degrees, I had the job, I had the house and the family and the seasonal photos and the holiday cards, and I had all of that. But a very different question is like, how does it feel to live that life? And so we ended up selling our house, our cars. I wound down my legal practice because while, you know, I was very good at it, I worked with great people and it just never did much for me. And so I put everything in storage. I had no keys. Literally, I possessed no keys. And my two kids and I each took a carry-on suitcase and we went to live abroad for a year or more. We didn't know. We bought one-way tickets and we just leapt. And it was in that time I was going through this divorce. It was, of course, emotionally like so trying, right? I mean, we essentially had, I met him when I was 17, you know, so we had grown up together and I just felt this call to trading in the stock market. Just the weirdest thing. It was a diversion. I was like, good, okay. I'll like keep my mind sharp. I don't know.
Right. And so was this something you had said he was talking about it prior to when you were still together prior to the divorce? And is that something that he did for?
Not really. He was in another part of finance. You know, okay. We had dabbled really early on. We were like hyper responsible at such a young age, which I don't recommend. We were like maxing out our IRAs at, you know, 21 or something like that. And we actually had dabbled then before he was even working in finance with stocks. And it was actually right around the 2000, 2001 crash. And so we were like, stocks don't work. It like doesn't work, right? Because we had bought all of them and then they plummeted. And like 10 years later, they came back to the same level. So we were like, no. They don't work.
Right.
So not really. No, it was totally a new thing. And so then I started traveling. We were traveling all these places and I was like, whoa, first of all, I like this. It's working. And I thought, this is a really nice life. Like I am completely location neutral. It kind of blew my mind, right? I was used to going into an office. That's the way of living that I knew. And so... Mm-hmm.
Wow. And how old were the kids?
How old are they now? 5 and 9-ish. Yeah.
Okay. And they were all in with you.
Yeah. You know, I think it was sort of like, this is happening. The energy was, this is happening. Yeah. And they had been, you know, we started in Mexico in the town in Southern Mexico, and they had been there before. So that was sort of nice, a nice introduction for them so that it wasn't totally new. And it was just so beautiful. My daughter's an artist. And so she did an artist workshop every Friday with, you know, this person whose career is being an artist. And she, you know, she had one-on-one dance lessons, and my son, you know, is like similarly it was such a bizarrely bespoke life that it was just beyond what I had contemplated was possible.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very dreamlike, and what most people think is unattainable or unrealistic, or, you know, something that they couldn't do. So fascinating. Okay, so you're traveling abroad. What started to kind of give you these nudges of finance? Was that happening in the midst of it, or what got you into trading?
You know, so I took one class and then I ended up working with mentors, like at a high level mentors. And I was completely content. I was just living my best life. I mean, we were like living in Mexico, living in Paris, living, you know, going to see friends all over the country in the States. And I would trade by morning and do whatever I wanted because the market would close at 1 p.m. or 3 p.m. or like at the latest 4. In Paris, it was amazing. I would go out all morning walking and come back at 3:30 for the market to open. I had found this amazing international nanny organization. Again, things I didn't even know existed. And just woman was amazing, and we're still in touch. And so she would like hang out and have this amazing time with the kids. I'd go walking in Paris, come back and trade. It was wild. So I was having this mentor, just practicing, living. And I thought, why would I ever stop doing this? Like, this is the thing. Yeah. Like, I'm like, okay, I guess I'm done now. I just keep doing this for another 50 or 60 years. And then what happened is my friends, most of whom were in jobs like I had been in, right? Like traditional professional jobs, mostly in the office, and had a lot of caretaking responsibilities, you know, between children or pets or parents. And, you know, this life that we're all so familiar with is like so full and it's so busy. And it's like, just, even if there is meaning and love in it, it can have a feeling of like not stopping. And exhaustion. Right. And so they started saying, they were like, pardon, what are you doing? Like, can you maybe tell us what you're doing, how you're doing it? Because we're watching you, you know, on my personal Instagram, like going all over the world. And we're still here on conference calls all day. So, you know, could you maybe let us know? And for, I forget how long, somewhere in the range of 9 months to a year, I was like, maybe it's just so good right now. And then it was so wild. It was in the spring of 2 years ago. And I, in 4 days, was like, I had this idea. I'm like, I'm going to teach the class. I'm teaching my friends. I'm going to teach them how to do it. And 4 days later, I started the class. So in 4 days, I offered it, let people know, had all of these people sign up, and started teaching the class.
Wow. Okay. That is such a good lesson that I just need to pause on, because I can even say for myself, I'm in the midst of creating online courses for writing children's books. I know this process like the back of my hand, but for whatever reason, I have been like working on this process for what is probably far too long, because I could easily just jump on a call with people and walk them through step by step. So that's good motivation for myself, and I guarantee for a lot of other people, because when you know something, it can be very organic.
And yeah. And I really relate with what you're saying, is because I had a project that I was trying to bring to life, you know, while I was still married for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And I had the most beautiful website. I had the most perfect copy. I had the advisory board. I had all of these things. And it was never enough for me to actually take the leap. And I realized, looking back, is that it wasn't my competence, my knowledge, any of that. But I think so many of us really struggle with imposter syndrome, right? There are like elements of imposter syndrome, of perfectionism is another thing that, you know, a lot of us have. And then the other side of that, I think also, is we live in such a hyper intellectual world that we have kind of a weird relationship with trust, right? Like the unknown, like you're talking about. And it's like, no, we need to like make sure it's going to work out. So we're going to do all these things so there's no chance of it failing. But it also sort of limits what else is possible, right? We sort of, as we like close in more and more and like reduce these potentialities and, you know, so there's an interesting dance there with imposter syndrome and like lack of trust.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good point. And when I think back to when I started my publishing company, it was just like I had learned a lot of things and could help people walk people through the process, but there, I had no idea what I didn't know yet. Right. And so it was almost like just being able to jump in without, you know, and now that I'm further into it and it's almost like I feel like I know all the things I know, and there's still so much more that a person can learn about. And so it's kind of that double-edged sword, but whenever I have taken the leap and just dove in head first and been okay with knowing that there's going to be learning curves and mistakes and that's all part of it, the end result's always fantastic.
Yeah. And it's so true. And it's almost a little bit of a bad word, but it's like, you have to make room for magic, right? And you really do. And we don't know all the possible outcomes. And our idea of what is possible is very much limited by our own imagination. That's the ceiling. You know, I see that so much in trading. What the thing that really got me with trading is like, I was like, oh, it's just about finance and all of this and money. And like, right. Okay. It's about like making money with ease, which is a thing. Like that's a thing a lot of us need to experience. But what I realized is it effectively holds up a mirror. And it shows you all sorts of things that you don't even know about yourself. Like, what are your limits around how much money you can make with virtually, you know, 5 or 10 minutes invested? It shows you what's your relationship to leaping, right? And it's like, what's your relationship to loss, discomfort, waiting? Like so many things just like held right up in front of you. And that is when I was like, oh, okay, got it. Like,
I haven't even thought about it in that realm, but it's so true for so much. I mean, it really just brings about all of our triggers and people's relationship with money is so sordid, and it comes from so much like lineage and, you know, inner child stuff that, everybody needs to sit and examine their relationship with money and their scarcity or abundant mindset and how they're seeing that play out in their life. That's for sure. So you clearly get the energetics of all that. Is that something that you work on with your clients as well?
Yeah. And yes. And I agree so much with everything you said. And especially I think with women, right? Women in this here and now have a really challenging relationship with money, right? Because first of all, we just haven't had access as recently. We haven't had full access. I mean, it wasn't until 1988 that you could get a business loan without a male familial cosigner. Like 1988. Yeah. And like you couldn't even get a credit card on your own until the 70s. And so just we forget that like we are in the generation or the first generation after even just legally having full access. And we know that there are still all sorts of inequalities that are just existing in the system, right? Not anyone's fault in particular, but that's just the facts of how it is. And so we forget that like that's the undercurrent where we come from with money, right? Like there were hundreds of years that we couldn't even inherit it. We just didn't have access. And so it just makes it so weird. And then we want it and we feel shame for wanting it because it's unethical or money's evil. And it's like, you're like, okay, I just won't touch it. Like here, you do it. Right. And yet there's so much richness. So yes, to your point. So I started trading and then I actually had, you know, things were going well. And I actually had a big loss And the wildest thing about it is that, so I was like in this zone with trading. I had come up with this trade and it was a really good environment for it. And I was making an amount of money that for my nervous system that I had not contemplated. Like it was just not something, you know, when I calculated that to hours billed in law, I was like, no, stop it. Like, that's not a thing. People like me don't make that much money. It's just not a thing. You know, I come from a working class family. Like, it's not a thing. And so I was doing this trade, you know, it was like 2 hours a day for, I don't know, three-ish weeks. And then what I did at the end of that time is I have this spreadsheet and it says, okay, if you keep going with your returns that you have right now, you know, in 12 months, you'll have this much in your account. And I did that. And it said I was going to have $13 million in my account in 12 months. And like, literally I was like, whoa, shut my laptop, had a weekend, came back to trade on Monday, took the exact same trades in the exact same environment and watched as the market went against me and I did nothing. And I watched an entire trading day and I took an enormous loss. And the wildest thing is that I was relieved. I was relieved. And that is the moment when I was like, oh, trading is not about the skills. It is about the beliefs. It is about the nervous system. It is about fight or flight, freeze, which is what I had gone into. And it is about the subconscious, which is fully driving the bus, right? Because my subconscious was like, uh-uh. Like, people like us do not make $13 million working 2 hours a day. That's not a thing. And so then I I just went down this rabbit hole and became obsessed. I had already actually had a lot of training in nervous system and somatic work beforehand. But then I started to see how that applied to money and all of that. And so it is a huge part of what I teach. And I call it the 51%. It's probably way more than that, because that is what is driving everything with trading. Like, anyone can learn. There are tons of great trading strategies. Like, anyone can learn that. Everyone is cognitively capable of learning it. It's just patterns. It's not numbers. It's not math. It's patterns. But the other stuff, that's the good stuff.
Wow. I can't imagine how powerful that is for anybody entering into the space, but especially women. And I would be willing to bet that doing that work initially with you has benefits beyond just in their financial realm.
Absolutely. I mean, as you said that, I got chills, because what I see is that trading really is, what I saw is that trading is a conduit to freedom. And it's a conduit to coming home to self. And so what I see over and over is people come for trading. People come because they want to supplement their income, or maybe because they feel like they should learn about finance, right? Someone said, you should know about this. Like, you should become financially literate. And what they find is that they actually start coming home to self and they start designing lives that are so wildly aligned. And that, you know, sometimes they look more conventional, but a lot of times they don't. And it's, so that's the wild thing, is that this process of inadvertently learning about yourself really reveals things unseen. And that was the big surprise for me. And that's why I'm like, whoa, strangely, this is my life work, because it's about money and it's about trading. And it's not.
But yeah. So much more than that. So much service to people. I mean, I think that is when people really seem to find their passion, is when they start to find something that aligns in a way where they're serving people with their own unique gifts. It's like, oh, this is what it's about. And the ironic part is a lot of times that isn't even like a financial gain initially, but I'm such a believer, and I've seen it so many times, that when you are doing things that are in alignment with yourself and you're serving in a way that honors your unique gifts and brings them out in others, then the finances just come with ease.
Yeah, that is what I have found. And we have been so entrained and enculturated to believe that it has to be hard, right? And we have become accustomed to the struggle and working for everything we have so hard. And sure, you know, I always say, life is going to life. Like, yes, there are going to be hard parts in life. And yet, I guess what I experienced, exactly what you're saying, is that also it gets to be good. It gets to be easier. Like, there is another way that when you collaborate with this part of yourself that we sometimes kind of shut off just to get through the day to day, it can have such a different feel. And it just starts to feel not so tight and locked up.
So what, when people typically come to you, do they have a similar end game? Are they wanting to just learn about the stock market initially? And I guess the piggyback question to that would be, are you finding that a lot of times they're coming to you and might have similar themes and like, oh, all of these people had a lot of like money scarcity things to work through? Or are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, I would say maybe half the people who come are sort of have this feeling of, oh, I always had this little curiosity about the stock market. And yet I associate it with a particular sort of person who just I don't really connect with. So, you know, some people talk about like finance chads or, you know, bros or, you know, Wall Street guys or whatever. And so that doesn't feel like an aligned way to learn about it. So they sort of think, okay, I'm not those people. It's not for me. I just won't pursue it. So some of those people are just, there's something sort of enigmatic that draws you into this realm of the stock market. And so I'd say that it's about half of the people. And then the other half of people, I would say, have never thought about the stock market at all. And they're like, we see you living a life of alignment and freedom. And whatever she's having, I'll have that. Meaning, not that they want to have my exact life, but they're like, you know, maybe they're living a life that feels like the one I've described, right? In my marriage or my work or whatever, where it's fine, but I don't know. A lot of people have a feeling of fine is maybe not the end goal. And so I would say that that's the other half. And it, the way that I ended up teaching it, you know, I talked a lot with my friends before I taught it. And I teach it in 5-minute daily videos because people's lives are so full. And so the other thing that's really fun to watch is that people come for these different reasons and, you know, they end up getting what we've talked about a lot closer to themselves. But it's also such a breath of fresh air because you can take the class as many times as you want for free. And it's like 5 minutes a day. So there's so much allowing and sort of like softening, both in relationship to money, in ease of receiving money. I mean, it really blows people's minds once they learn the method and then they invest 5 to 10 minutes in a trade. And the line that comes up a lot is too good to be true, right? Which is its own thing. That's like a belief system that we have, but also just this idea of like, oh, I don't have to effort. Like you mean some people have taken the class 5 times and I'm like, great. Sometimes they're like, we took a year off and can we come back? Yeah, come back. You know, so it's just a different ethos and sort of a different way of being altogether, both coming into the class, how it's taught, trading itself, and the other students that are in it, you know?
Yeah, 5 minutes a day is so doable. And it seems like when you can take a complex subject and get them in these little digestible bits, then it's so much easier to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
And are they with a group? Is
it group? Yeah. Class? So I have 90 plus hours of live group coaching a year. And so there are like, you know, you can ask comments when you watch the videos themselves underneath them, but also every Monday night we meet for office hours. So come with any question. And then every Sunday we call it charting church and we all come together and just like plan our trades together for the week so that everyone leaves that call with at least one trade, but often more than one trade. And then we have an active messaging group that we're like messaging all day, you know, like some people trade once a week, some people trade once a quarter, some people trade multiple times a day. And so it's really you know, these things just shock me. I came from the world of law, but it's like people are like, oh, it's my trading family. And to your point, if you just follow the flicker, you don't know where it'll end up. But yeah, now I have a trading family. You know, we just saw a village. We always joke about creating a cooperative living thing. We trade by day and do whatever by night. And there's a whole village in France for sale right now, like literally an entire village. And so we're all joking, like, and joking and not joking, like, okay, what would the shares be, you know, per person to buy the village and, you know, have our trading cooperative.
Amazing. Well, and I can only imagine that was like a pipe dream or something that you couldn't even wrap your head around years ago. And now it's something that's actually on the table, which is just so wild. And you know, when we're talking about the 13 million and how you saw that come up, I think that's so real for most people, is we, for whatever reason, set these limitations on what we think is possible. And I've found that it's just kind of something you chip away at, like, oh, I didn't think that this would happen or this was possible. And that did. Okay. So now, and then it just kind of starts to grow. I wish we could just like blow the ceiling off in one bit, but that hasn't been my experience.
Yeah. And I really agree with that. That's my experience as well. You know, there are all sorts of practices and protocols out there that, you know, can shift things quickly. And in fact, I have worked with practitioners who have shifted things on certain points very quickly. And at the same time, to what you're saying, I think one place where I have a really strong belief, and it's been my lived experience, is that, sure, you sort of steadily shift that belief or that upper limit. But I think the place that so often gets ignored is that the reason we have that belief, it's stored in our nervous system, right? Our nervous system is the archive, and it is the one that's driving the bus, right? And so if we don't actually get into the body and into the nervous system and get curious and be like, hey, where's that coming from? Like, is that a familial belief? Is that a cultural belief? Like, where is this coming from? Is it true? And like, where does it live in the body? Right? That's the thing. I mean, that's the wild thing, is that we're all carrying so much there. And until we sort of invite it out, it can be a slow go, and it can kind of just like keep us stuck. And so, yeah.
Yeah. What kind of modalities do you use to kind of work that stuff through your system? Because I've just, you know, in the last, I don't even know how many years, let's say five, give or take, really started a chiropractic like plan where I'm going every month with the kids. I've done Reiki, you know, connect with intuitives, meditation. I still haven't done acupuncture, which is crazy, but there's not a ton right here in my area. But I'm always curious to know what people use to kind of work through any of that, the little trauma or any of those things throughout their body.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of those that you said, I think are great. And I think that what I find, you know, I have many that I work with, but what I find is also culturally, we have this vantage that something can be solved with a single pill. And I think the reality is when you're working with something as complex as the nervous system, right? And we now know that trauma can be inherited epigenetically for at least three generations. And so we're working with a lot. It's pretty complex. And so I have found that it's like you're saying, it can be all of these different modalities that are shifting it in little bits, and that over time, the results can be really profound. But for me, the one that I always start with and that has been the most potent for myself and my clients is just the somatic practices of like actually coming in the body and feeling a sensation, right? Like actually sticking with the uncomfortable sensation as it presents in the body versus so many of us are A-plussing healing. Like we're out there, we're doing the things, we're making it hard. And when it comes to feeling, we know we're supposed to feel, right? Okay, we're supposed to do somatic work. And we're so good at intellectualizing it, right? Like, I can tell you, I can describe all of the feelings, but like actually sitting with it and being like, oh, like that is intense. Like that feels really uncomfortable. And then, you know, from there, sort of just with how I trade as well, we don't have to effort, but we can like start to ask questions. And the information will bubble up from the deep, like in a dream, when you're waiting at the checkout, you know, at the grocery store, like this further information of like, oh, and then we can sort of track these other pieces of information or memories through the body. And so for me, my biggest tether is the body. You know, there are different certifications, like somatic experiencing and Hakomi and all of these different ways and focusing that just like bring you back to here, which for me, the body is like the ultimate compass, right? Because it's what the subconscious is communicating with. You know, the subconscious processes, I believe, 40 million bits of information a second, and our conscious brain processes 40 to 50 bits. It's 100,000% more, faster that it processes.
That's amazing. And I mean, I can only imagine our intuition has so much to do with how successful a person can be with trading as well, just like those little intuitive hits. But we ignore
totally. And because we have also learned that, you know, our conscious intellect has all of the answers. And so we'll always override. How many of us have overridden in different parts of our lives really potent yeses or nos? And we wait years until the consequences of that are borne out. But yeah, there's, so I sort of, you know, you said this intuition, this communication between mind and body, I tuned into that myself with trading. And so that's how I started teaching my class. And only after I had been teaching it, I realized I uncovered this entire body of research that was already out there that they track traders on the floors of the New York Stock Exchange and the London Stock Exchange. And what they have found fascinates me. They have found that the traders who can sense the sensations in their body fastest and act on them the fastest are the most profitable. So the work is so much just like feeling the sensation, feeling the cue, and acting and leaping. I know this course is for me. I don't question it. I do it. You know, I trust. And it's accelerated so fast with trading, right? Because, you know, for all our projects, it's a little slower, right? Because there's a different element. But with trading, you're just doing that over and over, like leap. Okay, stop. Like it speaks a lot to leaping and the things we know, and it speaks a lot to boundaries. It's like, nope, I'm not available for that. I'm done. Right? Which is another thing that as women, we can really struggle with. We've not always been rewarded with having strong boundaries.
Right. With boundaries, with intuition. I mean, I was just talking to someone the other day about how we are really stressing with our kids, but especially our girls, how to always listen to their intuition, because like so many women, as we grow up as girls, and we just don't want to be rude, you know, we don't want to be impolite. And so we will bend our boundaries and we won't listen to our intuition because we don't want to offend anybody. And so just having that strong intuition and boundary setting, I feel like is constant work for most women I know.
100%. I mean, this is, I think a lot of us are experiencing, hoping that this will become normal for our daughters, of course, our sons as well, but hoping that it becomes normal. And we are almost learning it with them at the same time that we're teaching them. Because I think what I see in myself and for other women is we're having to unlearn, like you said, the ways that we've been taught, above all, be good, be nice, be of service, right? And so those are all deeply held beliefs, and it can feel so dangerous to not, you know, we can fear the worst, you know, And so I think it's happening in parallel. We are teaching them while we are reteaching ourselves. And these are the reasons why. And as I hear myself saying it as we're talking, but I'm just like, whoa, this is your work. Like, stock trading, what? And also it's like, no, it is the work. Like, it is the work. Yes, it's the money work. It's the boundaries work. It's the taking the leap work. It's the trusting in self. It's the sitting in the discomfort work. And, you know, I sort of look around and I'm like, is no one else seeing this? Like, everyone's like, take my class. I'll give you 72 strategies to make money in the market. And I'm like,
yeah, I mean, it's so layered. And I think that's, I mean, no disrespect to men, love men, raising a little one, love my husband, but women are so, that we're so layered. And I feel like when we bring all of those layers to whatever it is that we're doing, there can be such a depth to it that has been otherwise lacking. And I don't see a lot of men that probably bring the same approach to what you're doing as you are. And so that's pretty cool to be in this.
Yeah. Place. I appreciate that. Yeah. It's been a ride so far, and I guess I'm just keep following the flickers. And, you know, as I work more and more with my clients and I do one-on-one work, and I just see, it's so powerful to see the universal things that we're all holding as women, and especially women and money. And so that's even a direction that I'm, you know, I sort of started with trading, and now I'm going like deeper into like money itself and how we relate to it. And, you know, who knows where I'll go after that, but yeah, it's multi-layered and there is a lot of depth. And I really believe that the places where we've been told, like, keep out, it's not for you, or we've either been told it's not for you, or we've been really restricted or regulated. Like, I think of money, right? We've not had as much access. I think of the body. I mean, the body for women is very complicated, right? Is it ours or is it not ours? Is it for the pleasure of others, or are we supposed to be enjoying this, right? I think of sex, right? Like, sex is bad, or it's good, or is it? I'm not sure. Right? How about food for women? Is it fuel? Should I eat it or should I starve myself? Or even spirituality, right? Like, that has been something that has very much been, in many traditions, women have been kept out of spirituality or religion. And I personally believe, as much as we're all like, ugh, no, I really think that those are the paths home. And so I think for us, like, bringing, like you're saying, that the way of looking at the world that we have, just, you know, by the things we share as women, I think there's so much for us if we move towards those things that have felt dangerous or scary. And I think that's the path back.
Yeah. I'm such a believer in leaning into discomfort, because that's where the growth happens. And, you know, I'm so excited about this era we are in. You know, I very much believe that we left the Piscean era and we are in the started the Aquarian age. And I feel like it's a return home to so many things, but yet it's also this new way of where obviously women are going to have a much more integral spot in places that we just weren't allowed before. And it feels so much more communal and anchored in such depth that hasn't been there in the past. So I'm super excited.
Me too. Here we go.
Yeah.
With no real roadmap other than these flickers or these glimmers.
I know. And I can't wait to see what, like, our kids' generation, how they come out from all of this transition that's happening right now. So much dismantling is going to be taking place. And
it's been real, hasn't it? I mean, how's it been going for you since the fall? I think so many people are like, whoa, like, what is happening? So many shifts.
I know. Every day seems like, oh, Wow, I didn't have that on my 2025 bingo card. But yeah, here we go.
And we're going. Okay. Yes.
Yep.
I hear that. Yeah. I'm experiencing it and hear it across the board. It's like very much a buckle up vibe. Like, all right.
For sure. I know. And the astrology coming up is going to be wild. We have like a solar eclipse and a few other things. So that's
all of that.
Yeah. Where are you?
I'm in Seattle right now. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So this.
And how is this home?
This is my home base for now. Yep. But always, you know, one of the interesting things that happens when you come home, and especially when you come home in the way that you're talking about in different ways through the body or through energy, I have found that we become much more sensitive to things that before we were like, eh, whatever. And so I have honestly found after living in other places that have felt really good in a felt sense way, there's a real hustle in the States for me that I feel very intensely. And so it's a constantly, like, obviously I'm from here and we have history here, and it just feels a little more energetically complex. So there I'm all, you know, I have my eye on, I travel a lot. And so I'm dabbling in other energies and always thinking, maybe there's a shift on the horizon, but there are many ways to structure that. But I am, yes, here in Seattle for now.
Yeah. I lived in England for 4 months while in college, and I remember coming back and feeling like, you know, they talked about the culture shock and how you would rediscover Americans a little bit differently. And it's like, yeah, wow, we are loud. We are moving at a much faster pace. And it was a lot. And I was only gone for 4 months, you know.
And it is so interesting. There's also an element, I think, of like wherever we grow up, we're just much more attuned to the energy of a place. Because I have a lot of students in my class who live in Europe, and they have a real sense of like, ugh, things here are not feeling good. Like, we would love to move to the States. It's like wide open. You know, you can do anything you want. You can be anything you want. And yet so many students in my class from the US have either moved to Europe or moved to Asia or doing travel, extended travel in these other places. And for them, it feels so much better in these other locales. And I think a lot of it is just what you're tuned into. But yeah, I mean, I think having that experience though is so powerful, of knowing like, oh, the way we live is just a way to live. It's one way, you know, and it creates an element of choice. Which can complicate things, but.
Right. Well, and it makes a person more empathic and open-minded when you experience, you know, not just visiting somewhere, but you really integrate with anywhere else, then you're not so, you know, zero-minded. And I think that that's got to be one of the best benefits.
And that was a really big motivator for me when we were traveling that first time with my kids, is that I wanted them to have the experience of not only experiencing another culture and realizing that not everyone lives like them, but also I wanted them to have the experience of being an outsider, right? Of being in a place where everything was not set up for them. And I felt like that was really important, you know, like, how do we integrate into something that is that we're guests effectively.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a very big character building experience. I've had that in a part of my teaching career, where I was definitely the outsider, and it's humbling, it's eye opening, and it's just so good for a person. You see things differently.
Yeah, I think that is really essential, especially in this era, right? Where there's so much othering. And I really just believe so firmly is that we just have to sink in to all of the differences, right? That everyone gets to be in the circle, no matter how reprehensible they may seem, right? And it's like that ability to allow for that and allow for our differences. I just really think we need to move in that direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the reasons why I wanted to start this podcast in the first place is I had just gotten so fed up with the divisiveness that started to really creep up around 2020. Like, you know, if everybody just listened to each other more, I feel like we could start to break down these walls, because we have far more in common than, you know, we do differences, but society loves to point out the differences. And so unless we really engage with one another. Yeah,
I agree. When I first learned about your podcast and I was reading that, I just felt such a yes, because I believe that also. I mean, of course we all have unique elements, of course. And isn't that beautiful? And this shared humanity that has sort of gotten extracted in recent years is, it's sad, right? It's like, how do we come back to this place that we are all humans? We are all struggling. We all have these highlights and we all have these traumas. And I believe we're all just trying to do our best and to just listen. You're right. To just really hear, not to like let someone talk so you can talk again, but to actually like hear like, oh, that's what it's like for you. That's medicine. Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely medicine. And there's, it, I think it's very hard to have any sort of animosity or hatred towards somebody if you just get to know their background, why they think the way they do, what their lens is. I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, exceptions to the rule for that, but most everybody, they're good people just operating from what they know and what their experience
is. Absolutely. I mean, I firmly believe in the profound intelligence and the ways that we all adapt so we can just survive hard times. And, you know, do those adaptations always serve us perhaps after the trauma or the hardship has passed? Nope, often they don't. And yet they're beautifully intelligent. Right? The ways that humans have gotten through really hard situations and survived, I think it deserves to be recognized, right? Mm-hmm. No one is a not nice person just for the sake of that, right? There's always something underneath, often hurt, but often, you know, there's always something underneath.
Yeah, usually hurt. That's usually what I would see with my kiddos. I taught high school English for 12 years, and lot of hurt kiddos that on the surface had, you know, this rough exterior that you would just think are angry or cruel or whatever. But, you know, just like an M&M, you get to that gooey center. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Find out more.
Yeah. You know?
And if we just have that same approach of looking at adults like they are really these hurt kids, which so many of us are, then, you know, I think people would operate very differently.
I agree. And I think it's such important work what you're doing, right? It's just people telling stories. And it's so easy to otherize. It's so easy. And yet I just don't think it's the path. I think we've got to stay in the gray. We have to live in the both and. Like, can we hold, like to your point, being in the discomfort, can we hold the two opposing thoughts at the same time and be like, ugh, this is uncomfortable. And yet these are the facts, right?
Right. Yeah. It's gray. It's not black and white. One of the things I wanted to ask while I still have you is, do you see that there are certain myths that you're like, oh, I would love people to know this about your industry, or anything that you feel like you would like to break down in that way?
Yes. Thanks for asking. This is a fun one. Yeah. So one of them, I think we touched on a little bit, but I think one of them is, a lot of people have a sense that trading or the stock market is heavy on the math and the numbers, right? And again, I primarily teach women, not exclusively. But I think a lot of us are familiar with the research and having lived this idea that, you know, math is not so much for women, right? This is something that sort of exists in the academic realm. And what's interesting is, first of all, I think a human is a math person. We'll say, oh, I'm not a math person. No, you're a human, so you're a math person. Like, math is just literally a language to represent the natural world. So you live in the natural world, so you naturally get math. Maybe you just had a bad teacher, or maybe you got a bad textbook, because who actually likes to learn from a textbook? Not that many people I know. You know, so that's one of the things we work with. Those are some beliefs a lot. And the truth is, at least in the way that I teach trading, it's patterns, which our brains are naturally wired to recognize. It's just about exposure. If you're exposed enough times, your brain will recognize the pattern. So that's one big one, is that it's not math heavy. It's not numbers heavy. It's pattern heavy. So that's a really big one. Another one that you'll hear a lot is trading is gambling. I think this one's really interesting. And I think it comes from a place of, maybe someone heard a stock tip. I don't believe in stock tips. And actually, that is gambling, right? So if someone tells you this is a good stock and you go in your retirement account or wherever you're trading and you just like buy it, like, I guess that is gambling, because it could go either way. And yet, the way that I teach it, there are repeating patterns that give very strong indications of what the stock is going to do. Can anyone tell you with 100% certainty what a stock is going to do? No, no one can tell you that with 100% certainty. But can they tell you with a fairly strong certainty if you know what patterns to look for? Absolutely. We do it in my, and it's not just my method. Like, why would there be a finance industry if people couldn't consistently make money? Doesn't that feel inconsistent that they tell retail investors, oh, trading in the stock market is gambling, and yet exhibit A, Wall Street? Like, I don't know. That doesn't add up to me. And so if they were just throwing darts every day, I don't think there'd be an industry. And so I think that, and the second one I would say is that, no, there are predictable patterns that give you a very strong indication of what the stock is going to do. And so those are, and it's so satisfying, like, oh, it's so satisfying, is that as people go along the journey and they'll say, oh, I predicted to where the stock would turn around within 2 cents or 3 cents or 10 cents. And yeah, that's great because you can make money. But you know why that's really great? Is because now you understand a system that you were told was not for you. You were told that's not for people who look like you or from with your background, or it's too hard, or it's too mathy, or it's too numbersy. Here, just give someone else who you never met, like, come here, honey, just give them your money and they'll handle it for you. Pat on the head, right? The real win there is, like, it is deeply empowering to see, like, oh, I can fully do this if I want, right? I understand how this works. And P.S., now I am, like, so much closer to myself and in all these different ways. And so that's such a special moment, and it's not gambling, and you can predict general trends. I mean, like I said, often we predict, of course not in every case, but often we do. And so it's kind of like doublespeak. It's the general public is told one thing. Meanwhile, over here, the industry is doing something else. And
Kind of like goals for
for me. Exactly. And so those are two big ones. Another one, a third one is, I think, first of all, I don't use the term day trading. I don't ever intentionally day trade. Sometimes I'm in a trade and out on the same day, but that's just because the stock moved faster than I thought. And so I think a lot of us also hear this concept of trading, and we have these visions of, you know, from movies of, you know, guys sweating through button downs, like fist pumping, like 78 screens in front of them, you know, very like, you know, Gordon Gekko or Wolf of Wall Street vibes. And like, our vibe is like ease. You know, you can do it from your phone in the checkout line at the store. A lot of people stay in trades. I primarily teach swing trading, which is like you're in it for perhaps 2 days to 2, 3, 4 weeks. And so it's just like a lot of, it's not like that. No one is sweating, right? Like we're always doing somatic practices before we even enter a trade. And we're always waiting for a yes in our body before we even take a trade, for one. So you're never acting against your intuition. But then, you know, literally it's like, it's very easeful. You know, you're okay. It's over the course of a few days. And then like you're living life and you get an alert on your phone that you got exited out. And you're like, oh, wow, that's awesome. I just got this money deposited in my account. And so it's not frenetic. A lot of people actually report that they're calmer in life after working with me. And I've had a handful of people who are mothers say, and I'm so much more present with my kids now. You know, like, and so again, that's a place where people are like, what? Training in this, what is happening?
Trading leads to being more present, because you're right. I think the majority of us have that idea in our head of Gordon Gekko, Wolf of Wall Street, and it's like, you know, flashy, loud, sweating.
Yeah. It's like you will not find any yellow Lamborghinis or flashing fluorescent pink fonts in, you know, this way that I teach and that my circle of traders is. It's very much about coming home. It's about ease. It's about imagining how good things can get, you know, and being with other people who are actually willing to ask those questions also. So I don't know, it's a whole new age for trading in the stock market.
That's so cool. And so awesome to hear that it's not as mathy, it's more about patterns. And I'm one of those people that for a myriad of reasons, but at a young age, just felt like, oh, I'm not good at math. Math is not my thing. And as an adult, I'm still trying to tell myself like, oh, I can do math. Like you said, I'm a human. I can do math. I'm not inept.
Yeah.
But all those inner child stories that we're ditching as adults.
Yeah. And how you, what you just said there reminds me of something that I see so much with the women who I teach and in general, is we are so quick to assume that there's something wrong with us, right? The ways that we internalize these beliefs that we're exposed to is that we always assume what's wrong with us. Like, what do I need to work on? And, you know, I think one of the switches can be, oh, like the, just getting curious of like, oh, where did that come from? And like, who would benefit from that? Maybe not consciously benefit, but, you know, like, is it possible that there's nothing wrong with me? And maybe it was the conditions in which I was taught, or maybe it was the textbook, or maybe it was like the manner, maybe I'm a kinesthetic learner and, you know, whatever, right? Like, how much liberation is there for us in being like, oh, what if it's not me? Like, what if there's nothing wrong with me? Like, what a radical idea. It's like, what if it just wasn't a great fit in that way? And we, almost all of us do this. We just assume like, oh, I just don't have a math brain.
And then we continue to like put it out in the universe. And so we're just continuing to create that reality, even though underneath there's a perfectly capable math
person. Right. And so I just like those kind of questions where we can push on things and be like, what if it's not us? Yeah. What if we don't have a list of 78 things to fix about ourselves? What if it's just about removing the things that we've taken on by existing in this world and just revealing the us that has been there the whole time?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. There was an analogy that, my meditation coach gave years ago, but, throughout our life, we get a little mud thrown on us like, oh, you're not good at math, or you're not smart enough, you're not thin enough, you're not whatever. And pretty soon we're just, you know, walking around with all this mud, and our, you know, job is to start taking that off, to get back to like bright souls that we are, that are hiding underneath all too often.
100% agree. And that also reminds me of, for anyone listening later, but the story of the Golden Buddha in Thailand is an actual story that is almost identical to what you said your meditation teacher said. So there was this solid gold Buddha, and that had been plastered over ostensibly for safekeeping, and that at some point it had to be moved to a new location. And either in the process of moving it or when they were like trying to put it up on a pedestal, it appeared to be a plaster Buddha. These pieces of it started falling off, and they realized that underneath it was solid gold and that it had been plastered over. So similar to your point of like taking on the mud, the hard, mucky exterior. And yeah, what if the work is just revealing the, you know, luminous us that has been there all the time?
Yeah. What is that story?
The Golden Buddha. Yeah. Look it up. It's great. And it's real.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, I am willing to bet there are going to be a lot of people who are going to want to connect with you after listening to this, myself included. And so where would you like to direct people? Where do you mostly?
Yeah. Come find me on my website, erinwest.co, and come find me there because I have lots of fun goodies. When you just come to my website, there are many that if you just want to get to know me more and get to know my work, and you can, you know, just try out a few different things and see how it feels in your body. And alternatively, you could come find me on Instagram. It is Humans Who Trade, which is the name of my flagship course when I teach the essentials of trading in the stock market with all the other 51%, the subconscious work, the somatic work. And that's, yeah, those are the best places to find me.
That's so cool. I love that you have combined the two. And I'm seeing that more and more, especially with women-run businesses, is where it's really a combination of taking care of the self as much as we are stepping into some sort of new role. Because there's undoing that often needs to be done, as well as just like preparing our bodies and our minds to be most effective in what we're taking on.
I totally agree. And I think also so many of us are just getting to the point where we can't do it the other way any longer, right? The cumulative generational effects of the amount of effort that we have had to put out and sort of just like swimming against the tide for how long. And I think it's really just a feeling of, I am too tired to not be myself any longer. Right. And so I have to integrate these other parts of ourselves that we've sort of had to fold up into boxes just to survive. Right. How many of us have gone into jobs where we're like, okay, well, we're going to put away those 18 parts of ourselves because that's not going to work here. But there's a cost. Like there is an enormous cost to having to cut off so many parts of yourself. And that's what I see exactly what you're saying. Like, I think people are saying no more. We have to find a new way where we can be fully ourselves and do the things that we need to do to survive. We still need money in this age. We still need it. It's a fact. But is there a way where we can do it and not be exhausted? And somehow I was guided to this work and I have found one way. There are many ways, but like, that's what's happening is we're daring to imagine what if we didn't have to fold ourselves up into boxes just to survive. Like, what does that look like? And I think we're all reimagining that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's such a beautiful time to be a part of. I think that this is such a transformative time in history. I think it can look really ugly and scary on the surface sometimes, but I think it's because we are dismantling so many broken systems. And that part is ishy, but it's paving the way to such a beautiful existence that I'm super excited for.
Yeah. I mean, if it is true that there's like another, you know, birthing of humanity, a new version, I always think of birth, and birth is messy. It's messy. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. And you get to be born. You get to be alive at the end.
Yeah. Painful, messy, all of that. Yes, that's a great, great analogy and so spot on.
Wow.
Oh, Aaron, I could steal you for the rest of the day.
I would love that.
I have so enjoyed this conversation. I knew it was going to be more than finance, but you just blow me away with everything that you're doing and the way that you are serving. And I am just excited to share this
with thank you. And just a heartfelt thank you for having me. It was fun. And I think this is the thing. We all just need to keep talking and listening and hearing each other in a really deep way. And so it's an honor. It's always an honor to sit down with people like yourself who are doing such beautiful work. And yeah.
Thank you. And likewise.
Thanks. Yeah.